Hi, this is Tracy.
And this is Steven.
And this is Just the Two of Us. Okay, everybody. So, it's time for us to talk a little bit of TV. Yes, TV shows. We're going to talk about the fall 2014 TV shows.
And you know how much I love television, so yes. I'm very excited about this topic.
So, we... we'll definitely have a lively conversation, I'm sure. We won't be talking about everything, of course. We have picked a select few of shows that we both watch together, since that makes the most sense.
I know, and that's, you know, and that's one thing I love about your love, that you watch TV with me. That's awesome, considering how much I love television, and to be able to just sit there on the couch and then watch these little TV shows with the love of my life is... I feel so good inside.
Oh my gosh.
It feels great.
Stop it.
We got something in common.
We got something in common.
No.
Whitney and Bobby?
Oh, that one.
Come on.
No, we don't want to end up like Whitney and Bobby,
no,
do we?
No, we will not ending up like that. All right, so tonight we are going to talk about Blackish, S.H.I.E.L.D.,
Marvel's Agents of
Marvel's
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yes. Sorry. Gotham and Sleepy Hollow. And I'm going to throw in a little something about How to Get Away with Murder at the end as well. So
okay. So
even though Steven doesn't watch that.
Nah, I can't watch that. Show some bull.
So let's talk about Blackish first.
Okay.
So Blackish. So... if you haven't watched the show, just to give a quick synopsis, and Steven, you can jump in if you feel I've left something out, but basically it's about a black family, and they are living in suburbia, basically, and you've got the father, who is played by Anthony Anderson, who is, I guess he's an ad exec, we'll call him that, like an ad, he works for an ad company, is that what he basically
does?
Yeah,
I think he's an ad exec.
And then we've got Tracy Ellis Ross, plays the mother, and she's an anesthesiologist, if I can get that out.
Oh, that what she was? I thought she was just a doctor. Well, I don't know what kind of doctor she was.
Oh, sorry, yeah, she's an anesthesiologist, so. Yeah. And then they've got four children. They've got two older children, I think 15 and 13, and they've got two twins that, I don't know how old they are supposed to be, like eight or nine or something? They're pretty small.
Maybe eight.
They're very tiny children.
Tiny little kids.
But, so that's basically, their family in a nutshell, and we're coming along with them through their journey through, you know, life as an African-American family, you know, living in this suburban world, living in a predominantly white world, if you will, and just, seeing what they go through from week to week and all the little, you know, discussions they have to have with one another, all the things that they go through at work, at school, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that synopsis, but overall, I think the show is really good. I think it's really funny, and I think it's, I think the characters are just, I don't know, they're really likable. I like when I can watch a show and really like everybody, and I think there's something for everybody in this show. Yeah.
Well, if you want to just I must admit, when this show was first announced last year, there was a little trepidation on my part, just based solely on the title of it being called Blackish. I had some issues with that. And the show's from, executive produced and created by Kenya Barris, who's a television writer, producer, who's worked on lots of things. And also the showrunner, an original showrunner, was, Larry Wilmore of Bernie Mac show fame, and he now has a Daily Show, and he has his own show following the Daily Show that starts in 2015. Mm-hmm. And I did have some issues with the title when I first heard about it. I was willing to give it a chance. I said, well, you know, Larry Wilmore is involved. It might be a good show, title notwithstanding. And to my pleasant surprise, it actually is a good show. I mean, it has its ups and downs, but for a new show, I think it's doing a good job of hitting its stride and, you know, setting the tone for what kind of show it's going to be. I think they may have done about 8 or 9 episodes so far, and they're finally getting to...
Like 10.
10 episodes? Yeah. Okay, 10 episodes, and they're getting to a stride into what the... you know, what the show is about to be. And like you said, I think the cast is fairly likable. There's good chemistry between Anthony Anderson and Tracy Ellis Ross. And also a great addition is Lawrence Fishburne, who plays Anthony Anderson's father. Mm-hmm. He's kind of doing a split time working on this show as well as being a regular on Hannibal on NBC. So he's putting in work on that. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, so far I think things are going well for the show.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the title. Yeah, I was kind of feeling the same way, too, about the title. I think a lot of people... just based on initial, you know, reviews before the show came out, you know, hearing the title, you're just kind of like, what? Blackish. But Tracy Ellis Ross was, I think she was on the, she was on several shows, talk shows promoting the show. And I think it was when she was on The View, and she gave a good kind of, like, definition for Blackish. And, you know, initially you think, okay, Blackish. So, you see, you know, the previews of this show, and it's a black family, and you see they're kind of dealing with being a black family, and you
know, not just being a black family, they're a successful black family.
Well, successful black family, but dealing with a lot of issues that a lot of black people come across, you know, in a predominantly white world, whether it's in your workplace or whether it's, you know, at school or wherever you go. But she said basically that yes, you can look at it like that, like Blackish, like they're. It's like they're kind of black-ish, you know, and it's like dealing with the idea of race, but, you know, not because, well, they're this black family and they've got to, you know, almost like, I don't know if you want to call it like, what's the best way to describe what I want to say? Like, I don't want to say change themselves when they're around, you know, non-black people.
Well, I guess the concept you're going for is this, I guess, code switching in a way.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess that. But yeah, I mean, but she also gave another term by saying, like, it was black people dealing with their ish. So I like that, like, interpretation of the title. More so than I think what other people were thinking is like, oh, they're blackish. They're kind of black, but not, you know, not
quite black.
Quite black, right. Which I think a lot of people assume that's kind of what the show was gonna be about. But anyway, I think overall, the show it's a really nice take on a family sitcom, and I think I don't know if other people thought of this, but thought maybe it would be kind of like a new kind of Cosby show, because you've got these two successful black, you know, parents, and, you know, they're raising their children, you know, in, it looks like, I guess, private schools and that sort of thing. So I think a lot of people may have thought like that was the route that they might be taking with this show, but it's completely not. Like, one of the things I found really interesting, this is a little small thing, was that they swear in front of their children. I don't know if anybody else has picked that up, but they say things like, damn and ass, like, in front of the children. I remember, like, there was a I'm sorry, I didn't mean to swear. I'm like, ooh. But they said, though, you know, some things that, you know, definitely they wouldn't have ever said on the Cosby Show.
And yeah, and I think that's just more of a sign of the times of television in general. Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, I mean, I guess it's the lazy approach to think it's like the Cosby Show because, okay, they're black and they're upwardly mobile. You know, they're both professional parents. Right. They have these kids that they're raising and they live in a rather, you know, upper class, you know, tax bracket. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a, you know, a lazy characterization in the sense that, you know, already through 10 episodes of Blackish is already, you know, dealt with and talked about issues of racial identity and quote unquote blackness more so than the Cosby Show ever did in its eight seasons.
And
on
I think
NBC.
That was the point of the show.
Yeah.
To explore those issues. So yeah. So definitely it's more than that. And obviously there are other sitcoms that, you know, have black people on them over these many years, if you've been watching. But yeah, like this is, I think this is a nice take on, you know, what we've seen in the past. So, just some of the good things about it. I think, honestly, I mean, I like Anthony Anderson. I like Tracy Ellis Ross. I think together they play off each other really well. But I really love the children on the show. I think, a lot of people have been saying that too, specifically Diane, the small twin. She's so tiny, but she's just so... adorable, but she's got this, you know, quick wit, which is just, it's just great. She's got great timing, but all the kids really are really, really funny. I like the older boy, Andre Jr. I think he's got, incredible, comedic timing as well. So yeah, I really, those are like, the children are really like, to me, what brings the show alive.
Yeah. I mean, the children are really good. I like them. You know, one thing that, you know, about the show with, you know, and watching the show and watching it develop was watching, you know, in the pilot was, you know, Anthony Anderson's son, Dre Jr., wanted to have, like, a bar mitzvah because he saw his friends having it, and then, you know, Dre just had a conniption over it because, you know, he's like, you're black, why, you're not Jewish, why are you having a bar mitzvah?
Right.
And that seemed like it was kind of like a pretty cliched or stale notion in that pilot. Mm-hmm. So I was like kind of, I'm watching the pilot. But then the second episode the nod? I think it was the second episode was the nod. And the episode where when Dre was teaching his son about the black people nod, where, you know, you see another black person, you know, especially when you're in an environment where there's not many other black people, you just give them like the heads up nod, like, hey, what's up? And that one was really a standout episode for me. Like, that really turned me on the show because that felt so real.
It was hilarious
and it felt really authentic in doing the nod. Because, I mean, we all know about the nod. I mean, there might be some other folks.
Oh, outside, black folks know.
Right. Folks outside of the black culture don't know about the nod. And it just felt authentic when they did the episode. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow, that's just so hilarious. And like, you know, and it's funny, like, how the kid at his young age didn't know about the nod. Like, I knew about the nod. It's not like anyone sat me down to teach me about the nod, but you learn about the nod.
Just being
in that environment. I think that's also the point of the show, the premise of the show, and you know, overall, is like, you know, they're raising their kids in this, you know, suburban area. Most of the kids' friends are white. They go to white school, and they're not immersed in black culture as Dre wants to see them. So it's like, you know, the oldest boy doesn't get a chance to experience the nod. You know, he doesn't know what's going on when a dude nods at him. So I thought that was really a standout episode for me, and I really, you know, enjoyed that one. Mm-hmm. And the show's starting to do a good job of expanding the universe as well with, you know, all the coworkers at Andre's job, as far as Dion Cole joining the show as like a recurring guest star in a few episodes as one of Dre's coworkers and Dre's boss and another one of Dre's coworkers, and just, you know, expanding that universe a little bit. I really enjoyed that and hope they do more of that, expanding, you know, beyond the family, so you get like a fully formed vision of what this family has to deal with outside of like what goes on within the walls of their house.
Right. Yeah, I think, like I said, in a nutshell, I think it's a really funny show. I like the last episode that they did with Black Santa. You know, Dre is trying to take over to be his company's Santa, I guess, the person that usually does it. He passed away. And so, you know, Dre wants the job. Instead, they give it to a Latina that's working there after Dre kind of suggested to his boss to think outside the box. Well, his boss ends up thinking really outside the box and asking another employee, a Latina, a Latin woman, to be the Santa Claus. So it was just a really funny episode. It was just well put together. And recently they've been having Jennifer Lewis guest star as Dre's mother, who I personally love Jennifer Lewis. She plays kind of like the same person in everything, but she's just, I love her. She's just, like, just awesome to me. So,
yeah, she always, and Jennifer Lewis always plays somebody's mother.
Yeah,
you know, the mother.
She always has that voice. I mean, that's
Jennifer Lewis voice.
Yeah.
That reminds me of like, years ago, like, around when What's Love got to do with it in 91, when that came out. And Jennifer Lewis, and she played Tina Turner's mother in that movie. Mm-hmm. I remember her saying in an interview, like, they asked her if she wanted to be in a Tina Turner movie.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, in her, you know, Jennifer Lewis voice, like, she thought, like, she was going to be you know, playing Tina Turner. And then she says, you want me to be Tina Turner's mother? And I thought that was just so funny.
I can hear her saying
that. Yeah, exactly. Like, like, you know, and she's forever had a role of playing someone's mother. Maybe except in, like, Different World. She was in Different World, and she played, like, a professor in Different World a few episodes. So she wasn't anybody's mother in that. But, yeah, Jennifer Lewis always plays someone's mother. For the past 25 years, she's like, been playing somebody's mother.
But she's just so good at it because, she just is awesome in that sense. But, I mean, if you haven't watched Black-ish, give it a try. Catch up on it while they're on break. And check it out. You'll like it. Want to move on to another show?
Yeah, let's go right ahead.
Shall we move on to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah, we can start.
You can give a synopsis of that if you can try.
I can sometimes try.
I don't even know what the show is. Well, I know what it's about.
Well, I mean, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is in its second season and is essentially a show about S.H.I.E.L.D. agents where, you know, they're not the ones with the superpowers. It's, you know, it's kind of like the background work of all the Marvel characters, all the superheroes. So, you know, when Iron Man and Captain America and Thor are doing their thing, like the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents are the ones who, you know, kind of behind the scenes, doing like the smaller stuff that goes on, that's not handled by the big boys. And the show, you know, this is its second season, as I said, and the show started off pretty poorly, in my opinion, last season. It was really slow going, and none of the characters had, there was nothing interesting about the characters. I mean, they were all like young Abercrombie and Fitch looking characters.
They were really boring.
They were really boring. And the show was not good at all. I mean, it just wasn't interesting. They had like a episode or bad guy of the week type formula. And none of the stories were at least a bit interesting. And I know some people may have wanted more big, you know, big extravaganza, just like in the movies, which is not feasible on a network television show budget. But it's still, I mean, I would have expected better stories.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point last year, in last season, in coordination with what happened in the events of the Captain America 2 movie, and spoiler alert for those who haven't seen Captain America 2, I'm about to drop a nugget on you, but during that movie, S.H.I.E.L.D. basically disbanded because of the events of Captain America 2, and then that, you know, that trickled down into the actual TV show where things turned on its head in S.H.I.E.L.D. As far as, you know, how the show was going to go. So now they were no longer part of an official, you know, agency or government agency. They were a wanted group of secret agents who are still out there trying to fight the good fight. In season two, things have definitely picked up from season one. They've added a whole bunch of new characters to the show, to the core unit. The stories are much more exciting. Special effects are actually a lot better this season than first season, in my opinion. Like, the first season special effects were pretty bad considering all the money that Disney dumped into the show. So, yeah, a lot of stuff has happened. You know, it's really too much to really explain about all the plot points.
Well, what do you think works for the show now? Like, what do you think is good?
I think the show works better now with the addition of new characters. I mean, we've had new characters have been added to the S.H.I.E.L.D. team. Mockingjay, played by Adrian Pilecki. Lance Hunter, played by Nick Blood. A new guy named Mac, played by Henry Simmons, who used to be on NYPD Blue, and he was on Shark as well. And also, who was a late addition to the first season, BJ Britt, who played Trip on S.H.I.E.L.D. And it was nice that the scope of the show felt bigger second season and first season with the addition of new characters, because you just felt like you were watching like the same five characters every week on the show doing these little things, finding some artifact here and there. And it was like, it was really boring. But in the second season, with the addition of new villains or continuing villains from the first season and the new characters joining the new team members, the scope of the show was much bigger. It feels like there's more consequence involved with what they're doing now, with their trying to find information about this secret lost city where, you know, that involves some alien technology and then some other humans who are quote-unquote inhuman. They're not mutants because they can't use that word because Fox owns mutants and Disney can't use it. But they're inhuman people where they have mutant-like powers. So I think the show definitely feels larger in scope, and the characters have gotten much more interesting. You actually mm-hmm. care about the characters more, care about the stakes that are going on in the show, and you relate to the characters more than you did first season where you just didn't care about them at all.
Yeah. Overall, I think the show moves at a better pace this season than it did last season. Steven was saying, basically, all the characters were, with the exception of Agent Coulson and probably May, everybody else was pretty boring. Agent May. Everybody else was pretty boring and just kind of not really, I guess because they weren't really developing the characters very well. And you just didn't feel like they were worth watching.
No, they weren't. And I said they were just young, pretty boy characters.
Yeah. You know? And so anyway, I think also this season there's a better connection with the rest of the Marvel universe. I felt like, as somebody who is not up on comics and the whole Marvel universe, I've seen lots of the movies, but I'm just kind of taking them in and whatever. There are people who really are into the Marvel universe and know all of these things. So for me, I guess as an outsider to it, I wanted to see these characters really connect with that universe because, I mean, there's no other reason for me to really watch this show other than the fact that, ooh, maybe Iron Man will be on this show, or maybe, we'll see some of the other characters from the movies come into the show. And, obviously that didn't really happen the first season.
Nick Fury showed up in the last episode.
Yeah, but I mean, he doesn't really count. Nobody really wants to see Nick Fury. Okay, maybe Marvel heads want to see Nick Fury. But me as an outsider, again, that doesn't really follow this stuff. I wanted to see I wanted to see Iron Man get on the show. That would be awesome. So anyway, I just thought that now with this season, Steven said, they connected the second Captain America movie to what's going on the show. That connection was really, I think, pivotal for the show to really, draw people in. And then I think too, in addition to that, they just, I don't know what they did. It's weird. I don't think they rebooted any characters per se. I think they just, just really gave them more depth somewhere, somehow. It just got way better. So that was really good because I was ready to stop watching the show.
Yeah, I don't blame you. And that's something I think the writers and producers really blew with the show. It's it received a lot of hype coming in last mm-hmm. year, especially coming off the heels of Iron Man 3, which was the biggest mm-hmm. Marvel movie that wasn't Avengers. So everyone's really excited about the show. Mm-hmm. And then the show pretty much squandered whatever goodwill they had from viewers those first 5 or 6 weeks of the show, because it really went nowhere and mm-hmm. the viewership just dropped off completely. Mm-hmm. And by the time it got to the pivotal moment, like you said, where things turned completely upside down with the, with whatever the actions that happened in the Captain America 2. Mm-hmm. But at that time, most people had checked out of the show.
Right.
So they didn't see that the show had a nice uptick in quality. Mm-hmm. It went up a little bit. It was a little bit better after that, the first season, but then season two is it's a million times better. I mean, season two is just great as far as, like I said, the characterization of all the team members of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, the action is much better. And they're starting to tie in stuff with the greater Marvel universe, with a lot of the characters and the things that they talk about. And no doubt these things are going to play into, the upcoming features, the new Avengers movie that's going to come out next year. Right. And then maybe the other movies, Ant-Man and, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or whatever. So mm-hmm. that's definitely good. And that's the one thing I really like about shows in general, especially I like that about Star Trek specifically, is when there's a larger universe involved, and if there's mm-hmm. Different properties that are within that universe that they kind of work and tie together, because it feels greater than what it is. Mm-hmm. I like that when S.H.I.E.L.D. is referencing the other movies and things starting to tie in together,
because
to me, that even though it's more difficult to do well, for me it becomes a more satisfying viewing experience knowing that mm-hmm. well, there's this big world involved. And I mean, it might even expand even more with the Netflix shows that Marvel's doing, with mm-hmm. they're doing 4 shows: Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and some other show. And
there's Agent Carter.
And Agent Carter is starting in January in the S.H.I.E.L.D. slot for 8 weeks until S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back off its winter hiatus. So when that happens, I love expanded universes, and I like what they're doing. I mean, it just took them a long time to get there, which is a shame that it got there. But you know, that was the likes, you know, things I liked about S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. What did you not like about, what's the bad this season?
This season, what was bad this season? I mean, the only thing I can say, like, well, we should have prefaced this episode with, there will be spoilers in our podcast. So, yeah, if you haven't watched any of these shows, you're bad. Yeah. We're going to spoil it for you right now.
Right.
So, one of the things that was sad at the end of this little finale here with S.H.I.E.L.D. was, you know, Trip. Oh, Trip is dead. Oh, I'm so sad. Yeah, that sucks. But, because I really liked his character, and I thought he was funny, and, I feel like they started to give him more, you know, just screen time, and, yeah, I think he was starting to really get involved in the show, and so it really sucks that they
killed him off. Because he became, you know, he joined part of the team last season, after the betrayal of Ward and Ward's mentor. And, yeah, Tripp joined the team, and he, you know, at first he started off, like, as an outsider, but then he became, like, a part of the team. It was like S.H.I.E.L.D., I mean, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. had, you know, Trip as part of the team, and he, you know, went on missions. He was integral to a lot of missions, and it really sucked to see that he died in the mid-season finale when he was trying to rescue Sky, when, you know, Sky and the girl Raina, the girl in the flower dress, were inside the temple inside of the you know, underground city, and it wasn't just the fact that he died for me that was like, I mean, it was upset me for two reasons. One reason was he was shot a few episodes earlier by Sky's father. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of made it look like, oh, he might die then, but he didn't die.
Right.
Just to come back in the mid-season finale and die. And two, the way he went out just was like, it really affected me to see. Because it wasn't like he just shot, or he just like blew up in like a plane explosion or something.
I mean, he kind of died in horrific fashion.
Right. He was like, basically, he was like, I don't know, whatever that obelisk thing did. Like,
cocoon them. That's what they were in.
Cocoon them in some like ashy, I don't know, rock formation. And then like his body just fell apart.
Disintegrated. Like, dang.
And that was like, I was like, man, why did brother got to go out like that? You know what I'm saying? Like, especially because it seemed like it was a death that wasn't. It seemed like it was a I don't know, why don't I say worthless death, but a death of which nothing was gained, you know?
Yeah, like, I don't know why they chose to kill him off that way, but anyway, that was sad. What else didn't work this season? There were just things that I felt were just annoying, I guess, like the whole story with Whitehall. I don't know. I just felt like it was getting a little too, like they were dragging it on a little bit too long. But, and not really getting to the point of, you know, like he, well, I guess they got to the point of showing that, okay, he was involved, with, I guess,
the Red Skull in 1940s during World War II.
Yeah. So, and then like, what I wanted to talk about, like with him capturing Sky's mother and then like, basically like doing experimentations on her, because he figured out she was special and had this special powers.
Well, yeah, she allowed him to live because she didn't age. So she didn't age, so he was able to extract something from her so he wouldn't age.
Right. So, yeah. So after that, I was kind of, I don't know, like, I wish it kind of sped up to her meeting her father. I feel like it was kind of a while before, like, then she finally got to meet her father. And that in and of itself was kind of long and drawn out to me, like, I wish she'd hurry up and find out who her father is. So, yeah. Other than that, yeah, I think, like, sometimes I feel like what they're trying to accomplish gets dragged out a little bit. But it's much better this season than the last season. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen when it comes back from hiatus and see what happens with Sky, like what kind of power she has, and see what happens to Raina because she didn't break out of her cocoon before the end of the show. Before the finale, so interesting to see like what's going to happen with both of them, and yeah.
Yeah. Any other? No, that was good. I think it was, I co-sign everything you said. Show's gotten much better. Mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing it when it comes back. I think it's coming back in March, maybe, after Agent Carter has like a 6-episode or 8-episode run, whatever it may be. Okay. So looking forward to that.
And one of the things I was going to say too, with S.H.I.E.L.D., as far, which is going to segue into our next show, but one of the things that I wanted to see more of with S.H.I.E.L.D. was just, like I said earlier, bringing in more of the characters from the Marvel Universe, like just even like not so much them being on the show, although that would be awesome, but just talking about them so that you know, like, that there's that connection, like this is the group that's working with all these, you know, other entities within Marvel, you know. But on that show, yes, I would like to see more of that. And in the next show that we're going to talk about, Gotham, I'd like to see less of that. So Gotham, the next show we're going to talk about, is basically, it's Batman without Batman. How about that? It's Batman without Batman. It's talking more so about
Commissioner One Tree Hill or whatever, or OC. OC.
Is this an OC?
I don't know. He's from one of those shows.
Oh yeah.
No, but James. No. Yeah. Commissioner Gordon.
Gordon.
Yeah. Before he was commissioner.
Before he was commissioner. So you're seeing him as just a regular detective and his kind of, I guess, rise to becoming commissioner. Are we going to actually see him become commissioner in this? Is that the goal of the show?
No, because I mean, the show presumably the show's not going to go more than 7 years. I mean, there's no way it's going to be lucky to last 3 years. So,
so we're not going
to
see
him. Right, they're not going to get to that point because by the time he gets to become commissioner, like Batman is like Batman at that point as well.
So and
they already said they're not going to like have Batman on this show.
Right. So yeah, this is a show where it's about Batman, but it's not about Batman. But it takes place in Gotham, and we follow Gordon and his really lame partner through this journey of, you know, going through all these different gangsters and mob folks, as well as other people that you will be familiar with in the whole Batman universe, which, you know... When I heard about the show, I was kind of disappointed because, like, first of all, I like Batman. Like, I mean, a lot of people like Batman. And you would think, like, oh, this is going to be, you know, about Batman. But it's really not. But Batman is actually there. He's just a tiny boy. So, yeah. So, it basically also shows Bruce Wayne when he's a little boy. And if you don't know the story about Bruce Wayne, Stephen can fill you in on that. But, yeah, his... you see Bruce Wayne as a little child, and you see him at the time when his parents get killed, and then he is then raised by Alfred, his butler.
His butler.
His manservant.
Butler.
His butler. Yeah, so you do see Batman, pre-Batman, tiny Batman.
Yeah, in a nutshell, it's a prequel to Batman. It shows Bruce Wayne at 12 years old when his parents are killed in the street by what appears to be like a random mugging. But, you know, as you watch the show, you start to get the feeling that it wasn't just a random mugging and there might be some people involved with the murder of the Waynes. So the show, you know, is just talks about Detective Gordon coming up and you know, feeling a responsibility for little Bruce Wayne and, you know, because his parents die and then also being a war hero, he wants to like clean up the city. So he's a detective and he's trying to bring down all the gangsters. But Gotham is, you know, a pretty corrupt city where, you know, the gangsters and the mobsters and all those folks, the criminals run everything and they have control. They have all the money and power and influence. So it's an uphill battle for Jim Gordon. And I guess the premise of the show, or what, you know, was part of the pitch to Fox was, hey, we're going to, you know, have a show without Batman, but we're going to have, like, show you the genesis of all these, like, villains that are in the Batman universe.
Right.
Villains like Penguin and...
The Riddler
and
Catwoman
and Poison Ivy and all these other folks. And, you know, my problem with the show, I mean, let's talk about...
We'll talk about the bad first.
Yeah, let's talk about the bad first because I think it's pretty prominent.
Yeah.
Is... you know, and I think you might agree, like, they just put too much emphasis on introducing all these characters, mm-hmm. these villains, and doing foreshadowing on them. Rather than let stuff flow organically, like, they kind of say, you know, this guy's the Penguin. And then instead of letting the viewers and trusting the viewers to be smart enough to figure out eventually this guy's the Penguin, Oswald Cobblepot, like, they actually have a character say, hey, you know what? You walk just like a penguin. Like,
we're going to call you the Penguin.
We're going to call you the Penguin from now on. Like,
right. And it's like it's like Catwoman's character, who is a little girl at this point, or she's a teenager, I guess. I don't know if she's older or younger than Bruce Wayne, but she's a child, essentially. And she's like a vagabond on the street, homeless child. But she's got these little goggles that she wears on top of her head. And so instantly you're like, oh, I guess she's going to be Catwoman. And then that point is driven home even more so when you see her leaping from buildings and landing on her legs, like their hind legs, and landing like a cat here and there, and walking like tight like ropes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's basically like a cat.
Right.
And it's just overkill. It's like, okay, we get it.
Right. No, she's going to turn into Catwoman. But right. To me, the most egregious one is more than those two is the character of Edward Nygma, who, mm-hmm. as you know, if you're a fan of comic, Edward Nygma becomes the Riddler, and you know his initials Enigma, you know, sounds like Enigma Riddle, mm-hmm. but he works as like a forensic tech for the Gotham City Police Department, so he has interactions with Jim Gordon and his partner Harvey Bullock working on cases, and the thing is with him. Like, okay, his name is Enigma, and you know he's going to become the Riddler. How you know he's going to become the Riddler? Because every time they're in a scene with him, he always has to say a riddle. And it's always a character that says, come on, Enigma, I'm tired of hearing about your riddles. Uh-huh. You know, you keep telling me these riddles. No one wants to hear about your riddles. Every time, like, do they really need the Riddler or Enigma in every scene saying a riddle to somebody? Mm. I mean, it's kind of really ridiculous. Like, you're pretty much playing the audience for idiots, thinking that they won't figure it out. You should have done it just once, and that was it. You don't need him saying riddles every single time he's on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually think Catwoman is worse. Will be Catwoman. And then her nickname is Cat on the street.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, her name is Cat. Why? Because she moves like a cat.
Exactly. So I think she's the worst with it. But, yeah, those are kind of the annoying things about the show. And I think also, if you're a fan of Batman, you might want to see Batman. So that might be kind of an annoying factor about the show. Or this was something else we were talking about. It's like, if they were going to have the show without Batman, like, okay, pre-Batman, like him growing up, we were thinking that it would make more sense if they started this when he was like 17 or 18, you know, just older, because as you go through the show, little Bruce Wayne, and I forget like what the actor's name is.
It's David Malouz.
He starts getting involved with the investigation of his parents' murder, and he's, you know, you see him in his big giant mansion because the Waynes were very wealthy, and you see him in his mansion. He's got all these like newspaper clippings, and he's following the news, and the kid is supposed to be 12.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just kind of hard to believe. And they show him like this several times throughout the series so far. And it's just kind of like, I still don't believe you, little kid. Like, I still am not thinking like,
yeah,
okay, you really are trying to put this murder together, you're trying to figure out who did it, and you're following all these, you know, he's starting to follow all the politicians and like all this stuff going on in the city, again trying to connect the dots with his parents' murder and trying to figure out like, well, maybe some twisted politician wanted his parents dead, you know, in terms of their company that they had, and you know, he's trying to figure out maybe somebody was trying to take over his parents' company. And it's just so unbelievable because the whole time the kid is 12, and he looks like he's 8, actually. The actor is very tiny. Like, he looks a lot younger. So it's just so unbelievable. And we were just saying, like, it would be better if they had started this when he was older.
Right.
Because it would have just made more sense.
Yeah, because they do the typical thing they do in television shows where, like, you know, when a character is trying to figure something out, like, what they do is they put pictures all over the floor, all over the desk. Right. There's, like file boxes everywhere.
I'm a cop.
Right, and he's going through these files, and then, like, Alfred will come in and say, Master Bruce, what are you doing? And he says, Alfred, do you understand who's, like, you know, who's bidding on the rights to develop Arkham Asylum? It's like, you're 12 years old. Like, mm-hmm. How does he know all this stuff? And right. Like, it would have made more sense to me. And that's mm-hmm. what I would suggest is they could have established a show in the pilot with the kid. You know, they're showing his parents get killed, and then mm-hmm. then flash forward a few years later to when he's like more of a closer to adult age, some mm-hmm. high school age,
right.
where he's. You know, he's more able to understand stuff, and you can right. see that he's you know, because in the ensuing years, intervening years between the time he was murdered, his parents were murdered, and, you know, him in high school where the show picks up again, you know, he's had issues in school, you know, being in fights, he has behavioral mm-hmm. issues, and he's, you know, becoming more and more dark and obsessed with his parents, and then there's right. some inciting action that encourages him to start investigating his parents' murder from right. years ago, and he starts doing research and things like that, because he's at that age where he's old enough to be able to do that kind of stuff, you mm-hmm. know, 16, 17, 18, and also I think that would dovetail perfectly with when he becomes Batman, because, I mean, right. typical... You know, network shows, you know, they try to get them to go at least 7 years for syndication mm-hmm. purposes. Everyone signs 7-year contracts. So I'm thinking if he starts off where he's like, you know, 16 years old, for example, mm-hmm. you know, if you're talking about a show that goes 7 years, you know, by the time the show ends when he's 23 years old, just out of college, he's at that point where he's probably ready to become Batman. And that mm-hmm. would have been perfect to end the show. Gotham right when he becomes Batman.
Right.
But now, I mean, he's a 12-year-old, and it's like, what are we going to do with this? Like, mm-hmm. at what point is the show going to end with them, you know, Jim Gordon spending all these years, like, working on, you know, all the, investigating all these criminals who, obviously, and apparently, I want to mention this, apparently Jim Gordon isn't good at his job, because we know all these people just become super villains anyway.
Right, exactly.
Like, he didn't do a good job on Catwoman, or the Penguin, anybody. Or the yeah. Riddler. He didn't do a good job in policing the city, because in a few years, they're all going to become super villains, and then yes. Batman has to come in and handle that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about that. I mean, I was thinking about, like, well, they become villains everywhere anyway, but, yeah, I didn't think of it like, well, gosh, like, he's supposed to be trying to, like, stomp all this crime out. I guess he just, I don't know what happened with that. Maybe we'll see what happens. Maybe they show him
right.
being maybe jaded by it all. Maybe he, you know, kind of starts thinking, well, this is not going to, like, work out. Maybe he steps away from it. You know, I mean,
no, but he becomes commissioner at some point, so well, obviously he wasn't too jaded. Maybe he
takes a break. I don't maybe. Know. But yeah, so what is the good in this show?
Well, the good I would say is definitely I would say the performance by Mrs. Will Smith, Jada yes. Pinkett Smith. We didn't mention her earlier. Like, she's really good in the sense that she's chewing scenery like a, you know, beaver on a dam, I guess.
What
like,
does that mean?
She's hamming up. She is hamming it up on this show. She realizes it's kind of like a silly comic book type show, so she's really acting accordingly. She's being over the top in her performance and her expressions and, you know, how she's interacting with the other characters, and she's being really good at it. I mean, she's really throwing her all into it. And, you know, for those who don't know, she plays Fish Mooney, which is like a mob person who's, you know, works for the big mob guy, Falcone, and who the Riddler in the first episode, the Riddler used to work for her holding the umbrella. And that's another thing. He held an umbrella just like the Riddler. I mean, not the Riddler, the Penguin. That's the
Penguin.
And the Penguin used to work for her, and he holds the umbrella for her like, you know, like the Penguin from the comic book. So that's another foreshadowing fail on the show. But yeah, she's done a good job and really owning this performance and hamming it up. But, you know, spoiler alert, I don't think she's going to survive the rest of this season, because one thing, she's Jada Pinkett Smith. I don't think she's going to... I'm just saying she's not going to do...
Yeah.
She signed up to do, like, a show for that many... You know, she's not signed up to do, like, a 5-year commitment on a television show.
Not on this
show.
Kind of show. Right, I now mean, on this kind of show. She was on Hawthorne. Remember, she did that
show. Yeah, she was, but...
I think this, she's not...
Yeah, she's not going to do this. Yeah. So I think, you know, the first season is going to really end with her, like, some way, shape, or form dying and, you know, no longer being part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, because it's... As it stands now, and this is more spoiling, I mean, mean, it stands now, like, you know, they're on to, she's trying to, like, take over, basically, as a mob boss, I suppose. Like, she's trying to, like, stomp out this, the boss Falcone. Falcone that she works for. So, yeah, I mean, he's on to her already. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of time before, she's probably not going to be on the show any longer. But she's doing good. I thought it was a little bit extra at first, but it's extra in such a way that it is kind of funny. Right. You know, it's like,
I mean, okay. she's acting as if she is on a different show than everyone else. You know? Yeah. And, like, her performance doesn't really match everyone else's.
Exactly. It's too much.
It's so over the top. But then she brings the show some energy and some liveliness that the show is sort of lacking.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Because all the other characters are a little bit like,
everything's drab and kind of boring, and there's no strong personalities in the show. Uh-huh. So when she comes on, she's just like stomping through like Snoop did the buildings in the New York, New York video, you know?
She just comes in, bring something fresh to it. Yeah. So yeah, those are some good points. I don't have any other good points to really add, because this show just kind of like, I don't know. It's one of those shows where I could probably just stop watching and be okay with it, you know? So no, it's like, it has its moments. It has some decent moments. And
you just hope it gets itself together. Yeah, you know, it's exactly. Like, I mean, but it could happen. I mean, that's what happened with Shield. I mean, like you said, Shield wasn't the best in the first season, but then like it steadily got a little bit better by the end of last season. Now this season is like, you know, it's just, you know, off and running, and that could happen to Gotham. I mean, I don't know if it will, but I mean, and it's just good enough to kind of keep you watching.
Yeah, right. You're kind of interested to see what happens. Right. My thing is, I think I stick around because I'm again. It's like, even though they're making these, like, you know, they're foreshadowing a lot with the characters, a lot of over-exaggeration with these characters, I guess I'm hoping to see, like, I am interested to see, like, will they get to a point where they show, like, Riddler, like, breaking out on his own? Will you see, like, Penguin taking over? I think you'll probably see Penguin taking over if the show's on for years. So that looks like that will actually happen. But, yeah, I guess I'm trying to see, you know, the people who like come to the forefront in this whole world. And, that's the only reason why I think I stick around for it. So hopefully, yeah, like it gets a little bit better. It definitely has a potential, and that's what, you know, I could say too about Shield. Like I could see the potential with Shield, and it looks like they finally got themselves together. So hopefully Gotham will too.
I agree.
So our final show that we'll talk about, is Sleepy Hollow.
And as I like to call the blackest drama on television.
The blackest drama.
I mean, Sleepy Hollow has got some peeps up in there.
There's like, what, four black people on the show? Well, now three, right?
Well, who's the fourth one?
I was thinking Orlando
Jones.
Nicole
Beharie.
Nicole Beharie.
Lindy Greenwood.
And
I don't know who else, but you know, well, Orlando Jones' family is on there. Jill Marie Jones and... Mm-hmm. Little girl from Hunger Games.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll show them again. But, well, probably not, because...
I don't know. Spoiler alert. Orlando Jones dies in the mid-season finale, so maybe they'll have a funeral with his family at some point.
Right. That sucks. Yeah, so Sleepy Hollow, I don't know if you want to give a synopsis. I'm like... Bad synopsis.
I mean, Sleepy Hollow, this is second season Sleepy Hollow, and it's a play on the Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I'll be honest, it's the plot of this show or premise is rather convoluted.
That's why I can't explain it.
There's a lot going on.
Right. Yeah, it's about Sleepy Hollow.
It's about the headless horseman who is working for this like demon god thing called Moloch. Mm-hmm. And Moloch is trying to, you know, take over the earth, and the headless horseman is one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And he's the headless horseman in the first season was the main antagonist in the first season of Sleepy Hollow against Nicole Beharie, who played Lieutenant Mills of Sleepy Hollow Police Department, and Ichabod Crane, I don't even remember how it happened, but for whatever reason, he stepped into a time portal and he woke up in 2013. I don't know, but he's working with her to, you know, stop Moloch from taking over the world with his four horsemen of the apocalypse and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the first season, the main antagonist was the headless horseman. And the second season, the focus has shifted more to who is essentially Ichabod Crane's adult son, Jeremy, or whatever his name, and his name is, he's going on now, his nom de plume, I forgot what it is.
Henry,
good. don't ask me to explain how that happened, but how a son born in the 18th century, you know, ended up being in 2013. I don't remember.
Or there was some sort of
spell. It's so convoluted.
That
some spell.
I don't know.
I mean, the plot is really convoluted, and if you try to figure out what's going on, you hurt your head. But it's very entertaining because of the characters and the chemistry between the two leads, Nicole Beharie and Tom Missen, who plays Ichabod Crane. Is it Tom? Yeah, I guess it's Tom.
Yeah, it's Tom.
Yeah. And, you know, the show is pretty... I guess the only word I could come... It's hard to follow. I mean, I admit, and I'm pretty good at following stuff, especially genre shows, sci-fi, horror, and things like that. I usually have no problem following the plot. But this show, a lot of stuff really happens. But I guess the point of it isn't really to, you know, follow the particular nuances of the plot week to week, but it's more of like the interaction between the characters and the chemistry and the jokes of Ichabod Crane being fascinated both / appalled with modern technology and modern mores. And he always has something to say about, you know, something.
I didn't expect them to have these sort of jokes for him, but they're really funny. Like, and when he brings certain things up, like he, you know, like the cell phones, you know, all this is, you know, obviously, you know, you have to suspend your
disbelief
here. So, you know, he's this guy who's been dead for 200 or dead, right? Like, sure, gone.
Yeah, 200 years.
200 years, and he's coming back. So, you know, obviously there's like cell phones and TV, and it's funny, like there was one episode where he's like watching like reality TV, I think. He had he was watching like TV, and it's just funny. It's just really funny, like how he brings up certain things that, yes, he's frequently appalled by what is, you know, all these new, you know, things that we have. Although what did he like in one of the last episodes? What he liked something?
I don't remember.
Oh, I was thinking of that soup that, what's his face? Holly brought him when he was sick. Remember he was sick that one episode
was it chicken noodle soup?
No, it was like matzo ball soup.
Oh, matzo ball soup.
Yeah. But, it's just really, I didn't expect those little quips that he makes about, you know, all the newfangled technology to be so funny. But he definitely, he's got good timing with that, with his jokes. But yeah, the show, I like the history of it. I'll talk about some of the good, I like the history of it because sometimes we look up some of the things they bring up, like some of the topics of each show. And I guess that's what kind of... If you take the show one episode at a time, it's, I think, easy to follow, you know, but I think once you start trying to connect on the dots, that's when it gets a little like, what's going on?
Right.
But yeah, I think if you take the show, you know, one episode at a time, and when they, usually what's been going on is, you know, Moloch has tried to figure out some way to get back on Earth, which he has at this point. Well, no, because Henry, like, spoiler, destroyed him. But yeah, like, Henry has been trying to, this whole season, trying to get him to come back to Earth. And, like, every, you know, idea that he has, you know, you've got them trying to destroy it.
Yeah, like, every episode, essentially, like, Henry comes up with the plan, like, I've got this plan this week that's going to get Moloch back.
Right. And then Ichabod and
Abby, like, thwart the plan every week.
Thwart the plan. But, like, we do look up sometimes some of the historical references that they bring up, and it's really interesting to kind of see that they're actually using, like, real stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, made up. You know, quote unquote history.
Yeah, it's kind of based in part on like real life events and real life historical figures and real life, you know, myths and fables that have existed throughout history. So
that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's always good. Like the one episode in the first season, they talked about the village that the town that disappeared.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's like you know, they talked about that, and I looked that up, and it's like, yeah, it was like an actual town in like the 1600s, like. In Virginia, that you know, the basically, essentially, like, disappeared. And, like, mm-hmm. the rumor, you know, there's lots of rumors on what happened to this town mm-hmm. where, you know, they couldn't find what happened to any of the people.
Like in Roanoke.
Yeah, it was right? Roanoke, Virginia, yeah, I think. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when they do stuff like that, drop little Easter eggs like that, I mean, that's pretty cool. It's like they reference real people, real events, real folklore into the show.
And connect it to what they're doing.
Yeah, connect it to their story that they're telling, right?
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. I mean, of course, they could, you know, come up with something completely, you know, just fabricate it. But, like, yeah, I like that they take real stuff and, you know, integrate it into the show. So it's kind of neat. So I like that aspect. And Steven said earlier, I do like the chemistry between Ichabod and Abby. And actually really like all the characters. I like when they're all kind of working together to, you know, destroy Moloch. Like, I think they all work really well together. So, yeah, again, sad though that they... kill their boy off, Orlando.
This is like the season of killing off of favorite black characters,
isn't it? I
know,
what's up with that? What was his name on here? Orlando's character? I can't even
remember. Captain Irving.
Irving,
but
yeah.
His first name wasn't Washington, was it?
I don't know.
Because if it was Washington Irving, then he'd be the guy who wrote Sleepy Hollow.
Are you serious? We need to look it up.
Yeah, you didn't know Washington Irving wrote Sleepy Hollow.
I didn't read that.
Yeah, so I don't know if his first name is Washington, but his last name is definitely Irving, Captain Irving.
Oh my God, that would be hilarious.
Yeah, but then that would be kind of weird, wouldn't it? It's like, wait a minute, he wrote the story of Sleepy Hollow that they're living in right now.
I know.
Mind blown.
Mind blown. Okay, I'm gonna look it up and see. But anyway, what was there anything like good or bad that you liked about the show?
I agree with the good. Like I said, I mean, it's entertaining enough.
Sorry, it's Frank Irving.
Oh, Frank Irving. Okay, not Washington Irving. That's good. I agree with the good about the history. I agree with the chemistry of the characters. One thing that is bad, and I think people who have watched Sleepy Hollow would agree, is the whole story or subplot with Ichabod's wife Katrina.
Oh God!
Who,
yeah,
like another character who's somehow, I don't even remember how, was able to come up from the 1800s or
well, she was trapped in purgatory.
She was trapped in purgatory. Yeah, she was trapped in purgatory, and they brought her back to present time. And she is under, you know, she was under lock and key by the Headless mm-hmm. Horseman and Henry in this enchanted house where they had her stuck in there. But then she's supposedly a witch, and Henry has a beef against her because she basically let him die or killed him mm-hmm. or banded him. I don't know. He's got mommy and daddy issues. That's why he's trying to kill both of them. Right. But she's a witch, but she's pretty much like the crappiest witch ever. She's like the worst witch. She has these so-called powers, but she can't do anything with them. Mm-mm. You know, she's stuck in this house with them. You know, they in Ichabod and Abby, and I don't understand. Why don't you just go over there and go get her? You know, you know where the house is.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you could go to the house. They've gone to the house, and they've seen her in the house.
Right.
So there was one episode where she escaped for a couple of episodes.
Right.
Because she was, you know, something happened to her. She was sick, and they had to go take her to the hospital or something like that. But then, inexplicably, she went right back to the house because I guess she went back because she's going to... you know, be a double agent and spy on the Headless Horseman. But that's like the worst plan ever. And no one likes Katrina as a character. She's just not a good character. And I mean, I know there's people who are shipping Abby and Ichabod, and so they want mm-hmm. Katrina out the way so they could put them together. Mm-hmm. I just want Katrina out the way because her character sucks.
I just don't understand why they put this. She's a witch, but she like does very small magic. Like, there's nothing exciting about her as a witch.
And yeah, I like Hermione is better at magic than she is. You know what I'm saying? And she's
that
like
that is
12.
True. Well, she grew up.
Exacto plectum.
Oh, don't.
Electrum plectrum.
Please do not ruin Harry Potter.
Harry Potter?
Please don't. Okay. So anyway, yes. Katrina's character. Yeah, I kind of hope that they get rid of her just because I just feel like they're not really using her very well. So... you know, I wouldn't be mad if she...
Yeah, I don't think she's lost to the world. Like, because they just don't know what to do with her character. Like, mm-hmm. you could tell the writers, they thought they had an idea what to do with her, but then once they stuck her in that house, she was stuck there, and they just could not write anything for her. She doesn't...
Same with Irving, really.
Right, with him. Yeah. Like, you know, they put him in the mental hospital after he, you know, took the... took the rap for his daughter while she was possessed, killing the cops and the priests and all that stuff. So when he was in the mental hospital, they had no idea what to do with him. I mean, there were a couple of episodes they didn't show him at all. Mm-hmm. But he finally got out. You know, he helped the gang, you know, defeat Malik, but he was killed in the process. Mm-hmm. And, like, we can only hope that the same fate will befall Katrina.
We hope. Yeah, and hopefully they'll get Abby's sister, Jen, more involved, too, because they kind of didn't really do a whole lot with her towards the end of this, yeah, like, part.
Jasmine Guy 2.0, as I like to
Jasmine,
call her.
She's so Jasmine
she's
Guy.
She's so much like Jasmine Guy. Guy in her prime. Not like 53-year-old Jasmine Guy. More like 32-year-old Jasmine Guy.
If you guys haven't seen Sleepy Hollow, you should just Google Sleepy Hollow, like, images and look up Jen. And
or Lindy Greenwood is her name.
And she'd just be like, whoa, is that guy Jasmine Guy?
Well, that's one thing I also didn't like, is how they marginalized her character, mm-hmm, of Jenny. Like, she was integral in the first season. Like, her role started to grow more and more after, mm-hmm, they introduced her a few episodes into the first season. And she started to work more with Abby and Ichabod.
Right.
But then she's taken a back seat inexplicably this season while they introduce a new character named Holly. Who, I don't know, Holly is like the Poochie of this episode, of this show. Like, I don't know why they decided to introduce Holly. I'm going to throw it out there. Maybe because they thought the show was, quote unquote, too black. Because the core characters were black. I mean, yeah, the core characters, with the exception of Ichabod, was black. And they brought in Holly. But Holly is not resonating with the fans. I mean, I can tell when I read stuff online, like, people are not feeling Holly at all. He's definitely he's Poochie of the group.
Can you explain what Poochie is for people who do not watch?
Poochie is a character from an episode of The Simpsons titled Itchy, Scratchy, and Poochie. And in a nutshell, in that episode, the fictional cartoon that's on the show, they felt as though the ratings were going down and kids were less excited about the show, Itchy and Scratchy, which is a cat and mouse who, like, you know, do things to kill each other each episode. So they added a third character, a dog named Poochie. But Poochie was just it was obviously an attempt at a ratings grab, and he didn't resonate at all with the kids, because it was just like, you know, just throwing another kid on there. It's just like, Cousin Oliver on The Brady Bunch, or Leonardo DiCaprio on Growing Pains. You know, it's like when they just throw another character on the show, thinking like, okay, we're going to get a ratings boost. Mm-hmm. We're going to throw a random character on here that makes no sense. And mm-hmm, that's what, you know, Poochie was on The Simpsons. So Holly is pretty much Poochie. He's the Poochie of Sleepy Hollow. And it's also reflected in lower ratings on the show. I mean, I'm not getting too deep into the business, but the ratings have decreased this year from last year. I mean, a number of reasons are they premiered the show later this year. Like, last year, it was able to get a jump on all the other fall competition when it premiered, mm-hmm, in August. This year, it premiered right along with everything else. They changed the time from 9 p.m. on Mondays to 8 p.m. on Mondays, so this competition is a little bit stiffer. Mm-hmm. And also, I think because they started to go away from the core that they established. I mean, mm-hmm, Lindy Greenwood got less screen time. People liked her. Orlando Jones got less screen time, and people liked him a lot. And they, mm-hmm, put in Holly. So hopefully the character, the writers, will, you know, work on that. I mean, we'll, mm-hmm, we get back to what the focus of the show is, and maybe, you know, get rid of these extraneous characters like Holly and Katrina, and hopefully get the show back on track. Tighten up the narrative. You know, the mythology is just a little bit out of control now. It's hard to follow. Mm-hmm. And you know, hopefully they'll get that done in the second half of the season.
Indeed. Well, to wrap up, and I don't know how much time we've spent here.
We've been going for quite a while.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to wrap it up. But just before we go, I wanted to mention that I decided to watch the new show from Shonda Rhimes, How to Get Away with Murder. And Stephen watched, I think, the first episode, and he was done.
Yeah, that was the only episode I watched in full, and then I watched, like, bits and pieces of other episodes since then.
I watched the entire first half of this first season, and I did video reviews of a few of the episodes. So if you would like to check those out and see my thoughts on the episodes that I did review, you can go to my YouTube channel, and we'll put the link in our description box.
And you can talk about that in your video segments. We're not going to talk about that now because that show is some bull, and I can't stand stand that show. That show is some bull, and I'm not going to waste my time talking about it.
Some issues, and I address those things.
It's got more issues than Time Magazine. That show is horrible. That show is terrible.
Anyway, so I think that's going to do it for this podcast, huh?
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Hope you enjoyed it.
Hope you enjoyed it. Hope we entertained you yet again.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.